Hey, welcome to Your Turn. Mike Causey here, and we're delighted to have you with us as we are every Wednesday at 10 a.m. And today we're going to follow our tradition of following the money. My guest is Arthur Stein. He is a financial planner with a major pedigree. He's based in Bethesda, Maryland now, but he taught in Australia. In fact, I was talking to my grandson about you last night.
Oh, really?
He wants to go to Australia and go to school there. But and I know you were in the Peace Corps in Botswana.
Yeah, I was an economist for their government. I was in their Ministry of Finance.
Fascinating. Did you get them straightened out?
They were doing great when I left.
Okay. Before Cecil the Lion, too, I guess. I wanted to talk about the thrift savings plan and the possibility of people running out of money in retirement, and you know what should be happening. And our timing is perfect because the stock market has been on a roller coaster. The correction that you predicted some time ago appears to be here, and maybe the worst is yet to come. Before we get into that, though, I solicited questions in today's column, and we got a couple from people. I'd like to ask those first, get them out of the way. This is from Pam, and she's with the Defense Department. Said, I'm going to retire at the end of the year, December 31st, 2015. Should I move all my funds to the G fund? I currently have 65% in C, that's the large cap, 10% in S, that's the small cap fund, and 25% in the international stock fund, the I fund. So what do you think?
Well, I think that probably wouldn't be a good idea if she expects to need the money to live on. And I don't know anything about Pam. Mm-hmm. She might be a CSRS employee who's going to get an 80% annuity and never, moving to a very low expense retirement community in West Virginia, and it wouldn't matter to her. But if she's in a different situation, for example, if she's a FERS employee and expects to start withdrawing funds from her investments to live on, and she expects to have a potentially 30-year retirement, then putting the money in the G fund is not going to be a good idea based upon historical performance, because the G fund does not keep up with inflation and taxes. So the purchasing power of the money you have in there declines over time. And, of course, your expenses tend to go up over time because of inflation. And, of course, as people age, their health care costs and long-term care costs tend to go up. So most of the academic research shows that keeping, a significant amount of money in stocks, like maybe 50% or more, is a better strategy for retirees who expect to need money from their investments.
So because you need the growth to keep pace, as you said,
you need the inflation. Purchasing power of your investments to go up and not down.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Here's one. Says I've been retired 5 years and have not yet withdrawn any funds from the TSP. I just left it in and divided it among all the fund categories. At this point, should I consider moving my funds to the safer G or F? That's the bond fund. Keep it there. I have enjoyed good returns since retiring, and since I didn't need my money right away, thought I would keep it exposed to the market. But now I wonder, should I pull back, but only when the market improves? Well, that's the question, right?
Yeah,
there.
Right. Uh-huh. And it's a similar question to Pam's question. And one thing I would say is for people who are going to be withdrawing money from their TSP account or any investment account, funds that you expect to need in the next, say 5 years, maybe in the next 10 years, should not be in the stock market. They should not be in the C fund or the S fund or the I fund. The G fund, of course, is never going to fluctuate in value, but it's, the returns are very low. The F fund does fluctuate in value, but historically, most years it outperforms the G fund, and certainly over long periods of time it does. So those are better choices for money that you're going to need in the next 5 to 10 years. But most retirees also have to think about the money they're going to need in the next 15, 20, 25, and 30 years. And those are the funds that, based upon historical performance, you would have been much better off in the C and the S fund than leaving them in the F and the G fund. Now, past performance, no guarantee of future right. performance, but I really don't know of anybody who's saying that bonds or the G fund are going to outperform or expected to outperform stocks over long periods of time in the future.
Right, okay. And I saw an obituary in the Post fairly recently of a guy who retired in the 1970s. And he retired longer than he worked. And I'll bet he didn't plan on that.
And let me just give you another example. I mean, through the end of last year, and the 10-year average annual return for the C fund was 7.7% a year. And that's a rate of return that would double your money about every 9 or 10 years. 7.7% annual average rate of return includes the worst stock market downturn since the Great Depression. Mm. And it still had a great performance over the last 10 years, and it significantly outperformed both the F fund and the G fund. And that's why stocks are considered to be a good long-term investment, but not a good short-term investment. They're good. Much more volatile, but historically they've had much higher rates of return.
Right. I have a friend, and I may have mentioned this to you before, but he is a financial planner, and I was in his office one time, and he had a chart on the office that showed the stock market from inception till that current date, several years ago, and the Great Depression was just a little blip, tick in it. Now, people died and went broke, and it was a horrible time, but in the scheme of things, it's almost like a geological measurement.
See, the great thing... What's been great about the stock market is for long-term investors and a well-diversified portfolio, you didn't need to buy and sell at the right time to make money. You just needed to buy and hold long enough to let the stock market outperform for you. And it meant that, you know, it was a buy and hold investment. I mean, people can put their money in the C fund and just leave it there.
Yeah, and knowing when the market is peaked and bottomed is alchemy, right?
Well, one, people don't ever really know when it's peaked or bottomed till it's too late. Months later. Yeah. But what's much worse is when the market peaks is when people are most likely to be buying stocks.
Yeah.
When it bottoms, it's when they're most likely to be selling stocks. And buying high and selling low, they're just losing money all the time. People tend to invest emotionally. There have been a lot of studies on this. Yeah. The average investor underperforms the stock market by a considerable
yeah.
amount.
Yeah, it is an art. Got another question here. Lauren, do we need to take a break? We're good. Thank you. This is for Art Stein. It says, next year I'll be turning 70 and a half. My current plan is to make a partial withdrawal in 2016 in the amount of my required minimum distribution. Then in December of next year, I'll submit a full withdrawal request to begin in January 2017 for monthly payments based on my life expectancy. The other option I have is instead of making that full withdrawal based on monthly payments, I could transfer it into an IRA, which I know would give me more flexibility, but I figure my returns will be less. I'm currently invested in the Life Cycle 2030 fund. I can't anticipate a time when I would require more than the required minimum withdrawal in any year. What would you recommend? Keep it in the TSP or take it all out?
Okay. The advantage of transferring the money to an IRA is much greater flexibility on withdrawals. And the TSP is very restrictive on withdrawals. Like if you want to make a partial withdrawal, say your granddaughter is getting married and you want to kick in $10,000, you can only make one partial withdrawal during your lifetime. And if you wanted to make another one, say you're taking the kids on a trip, the TSP will force you to close the account. They only allow one partial withdrawal in your lifetime. With an IRA, you can make as many partial withdrawals as you want. You never have to limit yourself. Also, with monthly withdrawals, which were mentioned, the TSP, you can only change the amount once a year. If you stop your monthly withdrawals for any period of time, they force you to close the account. And an equally significant, maybe more significant problem with the TSP is that when you make a withdrawal, it has to come proportionally from each of the funds you're invested in. So let's say you have half your money in stock funds and half your money in the bond fund and the G fund. The market's way down, you prefer to take your withdrawal from the F fund and the G fund, which haven't gone down. The market's way up, it's a better strategy to take your money from the stock market because it's, you know, it's way up.
Yeah.
And it could be going down. TSP will not let you do that. And I consider that to be a really big problem that's going to cost people a lot of money. The difference in cost between, you know, the index funds and the TSP and index funds that you can in the same indexes in an IRA, if you get a really low-cost company, you're talking about a tenth of a percent per year difference in expenses. I don't consider that to be significant, but being forced to take money proportionally from each fund, I consider to be very significant.
Now, are they working on changing that?
I've heard that they are, and if they do, it won't be a disadvantage anymore. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as you know, with a TSP, it could be many years, and you know, I can only go with what they're doing now.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the way it is now. Okay, short break here on federalnewsradio.com, 1500 AM, and we'll be right back. Hey, Mike Causey here. Welcome back to Your Turn. I'm talking with Arthur Stein. He's a financial planner based in Bethesda, Maryland. And Art, can we give your URL?
I am at arthursteinfinancial.com, www.arthursteinfinancial.com. And I have a blog. I write about, you know, various issues about investing and other financial planning issues that you can look at. And if you want, my email is art@arthursteinfinancial.com. I also send out a monthly newsletter and notices when I write a new blog posting. If you want to be on my email list, then just send me an email to art@arthursteinfinancial.com.
Great. And you, I assume a large number of your clients are federal workers or retired.
A very large number of federal workers, Well, definitely more than 50%.
Yeah.
So, well, that's a big part of what I do.
Yeah, that's important in the investing area. People who are out of town, they're always asking me for a recommendation for somebody who knows the civil service rules. Earlier, you were talking about how emotional people are when it comes to investing. And everybody, you know, everybody over age 7 knows you buy low and sell high. And yet, if you look at the figures from the TSP itself, if you look at any of the financial pages of the Post or the New York Times, and you'll see that when the market goes down, it crashes, and last couple of weeks it's been losing 400 points a day here and there, that people panic and move out of it.
Yeah, and this is the enemy of good investing is emotions. And one of the advantages of working with an investment manager or a financial planner is they should be able to help you, you know, avoid that type of emotional investing. You know, as I mentioned before the break, I mean, they do all kinds of studies. The average investor gets really enthusiastic about stocks when they're gone up a lot, and they buy and they become very discouraged and sell when they go down.
So you're literally buying high and selling low.
And literally buying high and selling low. And then they can't figure out why they lose money. And of course, certain types of investments are all of a sudden very trendy. You know, we went through this big internet bubble and everybody couldn't figure out why all these companies that didn't make money then crashed and burned. And the reason why they bought them, it was trendy. It was being talked about a lot in the media. You know, in one way, investing in the stock market is so easy. You know, as I said, if you're in a well-diversified portfolio, you can just buy and hold if you don't worry about it. But people do worry about it, especially as they approach retirement. And one of the problems that people have is they sell too much of their stock investments, not thinking about 10, 20, 30 years in the future, Or they panic when they see, you know, returns that are very negative, even if it's a short period of time. And, you know, like this last August, I mean, it was horrible. If you look at the TSP for August, the exception of the G fund, every TSP fund lost money in August. And even the, like the L funds all lost value. And the C fund was down 6% in 1 month. I mean, you know, that's a big decline. So you could get real worried about that, or you could just say, well, so what?
Yeah.
You know, what do I care? You know, even if I was taking money out, I'm only taking out 1 month's worth of money. The question is it going to go up enough in the future to make up for that? Of course, the classic was the 2008-09, the Great Recession, they call it, when the market really plummeted. And as we know, a lot of people at the bottom of the market got disgusted and switched their money out of the stock funds into the G fund. And, you know, I just did, using figures from yesterday, looked at what would be the difference in a $100,000 investment if you stayed in the C fund or switched the $100,000 to the G fund. Well, as of last night, if you'd switched to the G fund, you'd have $116,000. And if you stayed in the C fund, you would have had $335,000. I mean, that's a big difference. Now, you would have had a lot of negative years when you had less than $100,000. And then to be fair, I said, well, suppose you were a genius or very, very lucky, and you switch your money from the C fund to the G fund at the very top of the market when the C fund was at its highest point before the crash.
Uh-huh.
And the money in the G fund, the $100,000, would be worth $123,000. But if you left your money in the C fund, it'd be worth $152,000. So you still would have more money. It would still have been a better strategy to leave your money in the C fund than to switch at the top of the market and leave it in the G fund.
And that $100,000 you're talking about, you're not talking about any additions of
yours. I'm not talking about any additions. Okay. I'm just saying that lump sum, you know, if you switched, what would have happened?
Well, take my own case. You know, your favorite person is usually yourself. I have a 401k plan. When the market crashed, the Great Recession, I did nothing. I didn't like it, and I get those statements, and it was unbelievable. There were a number of times when the only growth was the money that I'd put in that year. But I mean, it was just standing still, or after going way down, it was standing still. But I kept buying at the same level, and I kept buying in the same funds, which are stocks. And it was literally like one day, maybe a year
right.
ago, you know, I opened the fund, I sat down, poured a drink, and opened it up, and I thought I'd gotten somebody else's.
But yeah, get out the champagne, because all of a sudden it was back, it was higher than ever, and because you stayed, you know, you did great. People who are trying to move in and out and transfer, it just doesn't work.
Yeah. Well, Francis Rose and I interviewed John Bogle one time, and I always name drop that, the founder of the Vanguard funds and the father of the indexed funds. And he told us he couldn't time the market. He had never met anybody that could time the market, and he's met some very smart investors. But if John Bogle can't do it, why should you try?
Yeah, I just read a biography of Warren Buffett, and you know, it was striking. I mean, he wasn't buying or selling based upon the market. He was just looking at the companies. And, you know, one area that has done extremely poorly is international stocks. The iFund, even over long periods of time, has not done well. But that's not typical. I mean, typically over 10-year periods, the international
stocks... They've done very well, haven't they?
Yeah, often outperform, but... As a result, you know, lots of people are not going to be buying international stocks now. So I have clients, some of my investment clients, they have a small amount of money in what's called an emerging market fund, and which means less developed countries. And it's you know, over the last year, I mean, international stocks in general, emerging markets done very poorly. And, you know, I was looking at what it actually owns. Well, the biggest holding in this fund is Samsung. Mm. I mean, I happen to think Samsung's a great company. Mm-hmm. I mean, why wouldn't you want to own it? You think, I own emerging markets. Mm-hmm. No, you own companies in less developed countries, and many of them are great countries. The second biggest holding was Taiwan Semiconductor, which, again, is a very competitive, great company. You just have to be ready for the long term.
Did they, in that case, do they consider Japan and Taiwan emerging countries?
Well, Japan is definitely a developed country. Yeah. Taiwan, I think, is generally considered an emerging market, although it's emerged quite a bit. Korea, some of the indexes and some investors consider it an emerging market. Some consider it to be a developed market. You know, putting it in the same boat as the United States and Japan. China is considered to be an emerging market. It's the second largest economy in the world. I mean, it's extremely competitive in a lot of areas, but it's considered to be an emerging market. So, you know, there's always going to be gray areas. South Korea is a gray area. I think it should be treated as a developed country, but, you know.
Yeah. It's up to them. I used some of your figures today in the column. You're talking about how the CS&I funds have performed this year. Would you explain it first what those funds are?
Yeah.
CS&I.
Okay. So the C fund is considered, C stands for the Corporate Stock Fund. It is an S&P 500 index fund, which means that it is going to invest in 500 of the largest companies in the United States. And those 500 companies represent about 70% of the total U.S. stock market. The S fund, S, I presume, stands for small cap, but it's really, which means small companies, but it really invests in some very large companies, like maybe the 510th largest company in the United States, medium-sized company and small companies. And it picks up most of the rest of the United States stock market. Again, it's an index fund. The I fund's an international stock index fund. Those international stocks are developed countries, Europe and Japan mainly, and Australia, New Zealand. So it doesn't really have emerging markets in it, and they tend to be larger companies in developed countries. And then you get the F fund. F stands for fixed income. It's a bond fund. It has all kinds of bonds. And the G fund is unique to the TSP. It's like a savings account in the sense it does not fluctuate in value, and all the other ones do. But it has a fabulous interest rate of return for a savings account type investment, much higher than you could ever find in the private sector.
Yeah, good. Okay, our producer, Lauren Larson, is giving us the time signal here. We'll be right back here on federalnewsradio.com, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey here. I'm talking with Arthur Stein. He's a financial planner based in Bethesda, Maryland. And he said more than half of his clients are federal workers or federal retirees. So he does not only know the market and investing, but he knows the civil service rules and whatnot. Arthur, you're not particularly a big fan of the life cycle funds?
No, I'm not. Because, you know, people like the life cycle funds because they automatically switch you from 80% stocks when they're first issued to 20% stocks and 80% G and F when they reach their maturity.
So as time marches on, they get more conservative.
They get more conservative. And then you end up in the L income fund, which is going to be 80%. Really, I think it's 64 or 74% in the G fund, a little bit in the F fund, and then 20% in the CS&I. Well, the problem with that is for long people who need money 10 and 20 and 30 years from now, you have the vast majority of your funds in the G fund, which is, you know, the worst performing of any of the TSP funds and loses money to taxes and inflation. So it leads you in the wrong direction. Now, people say the L funds are safer because you're going to end up in a less volatile portfolio. And while that's true, volatility for long-term investors is not a big a risk as losing purchasing power to taxes and inflation.
Oh, yeah. The one thing that people at the Federal Retirement Thrift Investment Board, they say that it's their life cycle funds, which is a fund of funds. You know, it's
right.
All five of the plant funds. They say theirs has been designed specifically for federal workers, so it's different because it takes into account the fact that they get a guaranteed annuity and it's indexed inflation.
I'm not buying that for FERS employees. These are people who, because of their, you know, cost of living adjustment not being as good, their pensions not being as high a percentage of their previous income, are extremely likely, and in most cases will probably need money from their investments to live on. And even if they don't need it when they first retire, they're going to need it at some point. And if they need it for decades, and, you know, I'm guessing that most federal employees will when they retire, that conservative allocation is likely to leave them with, you know, less money to spend.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Along that line, we just got a phone call from Ohio. It says, if I retire and transfer to an IRA with 60% stocks and 40% bonds, the bond fund may lose money when the Federal Reserve raises interest rates. Is there any substitute for the G fund income portion of my IRA? It says, I'm planning to transfer from a TSP to an IRA.
Okay. So the issue is this. When interest rates go up, the value of existing bonds goes down. And the F fund is composed of existing bonds. So if interest rates go up, you expect the value of the bonds in the F fund to go down. However, and the Federal Reserve is expected to raise interest rates maybe this month, you know, mm-hmm. but in the near future. But keep in mind that the bond market knows this is going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I have to believe that a lot of the price effect on bonds has already happened.
Mm-hmm.
And also the Federal Reserve only controls short-term interest rates, and the bonds in the F fund are mainly long-term and medium-term, so they may not be affected that much. And thirdly, I mean, there's no substitute for the G fund. I mean, you're just not going to find that anywhere.
I wonder sometimes if it's just me. The concept of bonds, the process of the bond market, just totally baffles me. And I hear people like you who know it say, when interest rates go up, bonds go down, and I think, what does that mean? You know, the bond market is a tough one, isn't it?
It's harder for people to grasp.
Yeah.
But it's all based upon this. If you buy, say, a 10-year bond, if you keep it for 10 years, it's going to be worth whatever, you know, was originally issued at. So you don't have to worry about fluctuations in value. But if you want to sell it before it matures, then the question is, am I going to get a higher price or a lower price for this bond? Well, if you bought a bond that paid 4% and say the next day interest rates went up to 5%, people aren't going to want to buy your bond because they can get a 5% mm-hmm. bond, you know, that matures one day later, and you've only got a 4% bond. And so what happens is the value of your bond is going to go down, and it's going to go down enough so that someone buying it would get the equivalent of a 5% yield on the bond, a 5% interest rate.
Which is great if the inflation rate is 3%, not so great if it's 8%.
Yeah. So, you know, bonds move in the opposite direction of interest rates. And it's going to happen, you know, with the F fund. If long-term rates go up, the value of the F fund will go down, but the interest being paid each year by the F fund will not be affected. And so if you're reinvesting, you know, you're holding the F fund, you're buying cheaper shares that yield a higher interest rate. But another thing I would say that, you know, a 60% stock, 40% bond portfolio is pretty classic. It certainly works well for a lot of people. The main purpose of the 40%, in my mind, is to reduce volatility and to allow you to change some money from bonds to stocks if stocks go way down. I mean, in August, when we had these big declines, I was actually at the beach for a week, and I took 2 days off. I called all my clients. I did nothing for 2 days. And, you know, we sold some bond investments and bought some stock investments because it was like a good time to buy.
Okay.
You know, and bonds hadn't changed. So, you know, we rebalanced their portfolio to keep the percentage approximately the same as our original goal. And that's one of the things that lots of people don't do. There can be big swings in the market, and people tend not to take advantage of it in an appropriate way. You know, if the market crashes like in 2008, people were much more likely to sell stocks and buy into the G fund than they were to take money out of the G fund and buy stocks, which would have been a fabulous decision.
Well, you know what I my favorite example, my example, is AAA. They tell you, and if the roads are icy and your car starts skidding and it's going to go over a cliff, to turn your wheels into the direction of the skid. And I think I know that I'm a AAA member. I believe them, but will I do? Could I do it? When it, I mean, your tendency is to turn away from it and put on the brakes. The same kind of thing, huh?
Yeah, I mean, an example I use is the stock market's like a yo-yo. Yo-yo's going up and down. But for a person who's walking up a hill,
I see.
You're going to get to the point where even when the yo-yo is at its lowest point,
it's higher up the hill.
It's higher than it was at its highest point further down the hill. And the stock market is extremely volatile. It's subject to large declines and large increases, but over time it's been volatile with an upward bias. And so, you know, the C fund, whatever the share price is today, it was a fraction of that 15 and 20 years ago.
Yeah, that's amazing. So I know you did a blog recently and talking about this situation, the guns of August, how bad it was, and the understandable that people invest based on emotion. I mean, you can't, it's, to some extent, you can't help it. You got an international fund, and you look at literally millions of people fleeing from Syria and various other underdeveloped countries coming into Europe. They're drowning on the way from Turkey to get to Greece, to get to Germany. And you look at this situation, and then you look at the Chinese economy is in trouble. We don't
Slowing.
Know the extent of it. Yeah. And all these things that are going on in the world. And if you have international stocks, your natural tendency is to run to the nearest exit.
Yeah. Or, you know, look at the United States. I mean, we've had Watergate.
Yeah.
9/11, Vietnam War, the protests, the terrible social dislocation, all kinds of terrible things have happened, but we've survived and continued to do well. And international stocks, you know, you're not investing in Syria and Iraq and Iran, or Jordan even probably. It's much more likely to be in Latin America and Asia. We're not in, you know, the amount of money, even in an emerging market fund that goes to African markets and Middle Eastern markets is small.
Okay. Interesting you'd say that. There's been pressure on the Federal Retirement Thrift Investment Board, the people that run the TSP, been a lot of outside pressure on them to give people more choices. And some of it's come from Congress. pressure groups, get to the members of Congress, and they push for things. The REITs was a classic case, real estate investment trusts, and this was considered a no-brainer. REITs can never lose money. There's a building boom. Just look at what's going on in Washington. Well, they had trouble.
Yeah.
And then a precious metal fund, you know, let me invest in gold or platinum or something like that. Socially conscious funds, green funds, funds that are minority business owned funds and that kind of thing. And the TSP has resisted. Do you think that's a good idea?
My personal opinion is that the TSP should invest. I mean, one of the advantages of the thrift savings plan is it has very few choices, but those choices cover a tremendous amount of the investing market. And I think the more choices you give people, the more likely they are to either make a mistake or not make a decision. I've seen 401ks where there are 20, 30, 40 mutual funds in the 401k. It's ridiculous. People cannot make that level of decision. This works really well. I mean, it's worked really well. First of all, the C and the S fund pretty much completely cover the U.S. stock market.
Yeah.
The I fund is a more narrow part of international stocks, but, you know, nothing is perfect. If they wanted another international fund, you know, I might agree with it. But, you know, they could just pick a different index that was more inclusive. The F fund is... you know, it doesn't have all types of bonds in it, but so what? This has worked really well, and one of the reasons it's worked well is there aren't a lot of choices. And the second thing I would say, Mike, is, and you know this, whenever they push to add one of these specialized fund, it's because that investment has peaked.
Yeah,
you
right.
You know, when they wanted to do the gold fund, gold was at $1,800 an ounce. And now it's down to about $1,100. Same thing with the real estate fund. This is good. This is simple. Mm-hmm. It works. It keeps the expenses down. I also don't think that it's really going to help if they invest them, let them invest in outside mutual funds. It might keep a little more money in the TSP. But I think if they're trying to keep money in the TSP after people retire, they'd be a lot better off just to change the withdrawal rules than to start adding more funds.
Yeah, and what's the advantage, if any, to them? Let me ask you that after the break here. Be right back on federalnewsradio.com, 1500 AM. Mike Causey, welcome back to Your Turn, talking with Arthur Stein, financial planner in Bethesda, Maryland. And we've got about 4 minutes left, Art, here. And we're talking about the importance of investing in thrift savings plan and whatnot. And you had some startling numbers that there's a 50% chance, if you're married, there's a 50% chance now that at least one of you will live to 95 and possibly both. And that raises all kinds of interesting questions.
Yeah, right. I know it. People need to plan for a really long retirement. I mean, unless you have some dread disease or you're a really heavy smoker, I mean, you should plan on living to 95 or 100, not because we all will, but let's face it. I mean, federal employees and retirees have great health care coverage, and the medical world becomes increasingly good at keeping us alive. So in order to make sure you have enough money, I would say, one, decide what percentage of your investments you want in stocks and bonds, realizing that the C and the S and the I fund are stock funds, the F fund's a bond fund, then you have the G fund. And then write down the allocation that you want so that when you do get a big market drop, your goal becomes to go back to that allocation. You know, use that as a way to fight emotion. And that means when one fund increases or decreases significantly, you rebalance. But also, once you get around to, you know that you're going to be spending this money, the money that you need to spend in the next 5 or 10 years should be in something like the G fund or the F fund, so that you don't have to worry about stock market declines, which, you know, in some cases have lasted 10 years, reducing the value of your money that you're going to need to spend in the foreseeable future. It's your long-term money that should be in stocks, certainly the 10-plus years money.
So that earlier question we had from the person who said he's not going to really ever need it, he's just going to take the required minimum distribution. Right. So somebody like that, it would be fine to be in stocks.
You, I mean, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay, I'm sorry, I interrupted you. You were going to talk about when funds go up and down.
Yeah, I think I mentioned that. You know, when the value goes up and down, then you rebalance.
Buy low, sell high.
And if you can't do this yourself, then get a financial planner to help you.
Good enough. Arthur Stein, thank you so much for being with us. This show will be archived on our homepage so people can listen to it at any time, and I hope they do. Thank you, Lauren Larson, for doing it. I hope to see you all here next Wednesday at 10 a.m. Have a good week.